We are talking about emotions tonight, and we're still in this unit of talking about how we struggle, and so we'll introduce emotions and then introduce the struggling aspect of that. And this is going to be overly simplified. It just is. Probably like everything we talk about this quarter, it's oversimplified. But in terms of some basics that I think are helpful and give us a good framework, four basic emotions around this wheel: glad, mad, sad, scared. Okay, and it rhymes, so that must make it true, right? It is helpful to remember that way. I mean, just the basics of glad, mad, sad, scared. You could organize it different ways in terms of around the circle, but we'll talk about some of these different emotions. And then this kind of sense of self. So another word for glad, happiness; for mad, anger; for sad, sorrow; for scared, fear. And we could put other words with it. Okay. So this is super oversimplified, but I do think for our purposes it's useful to think about. Maybe kind of common sense. You don't want to get stuck in any one of these emotions. Who gave us all these emotions? God, right? God gave us all these emotions, and they all have their place. You don't want to get stuck in any one of them. You don't want to be enslaved to any single one of them, or in kind of a downward spiral, which is another way of saying kind of a slavery you can't escape from. And so we don't want to be enslaved to anyone or stuck in anyone. We want to feel appropriately and handle wisely all of these emotions. The word there that's paraphrasing is slightly changed. Now it says happy, angry, sorrowful, afraid, but same basic things. All these emotions are God-given. They all have a place. And so we want to consider that. So we've all felt all these things, right? I think every person in this room has felt glad, mad, sad, and scared at some point or another, right? So what would you say that these emotions, start with glad. What are some words you would use to describe glad or happy, happiness? Other words or descriptions for that emotion?
Joy.
Joy, okay.
Pleased.
Good, I like that. Would we say that glad is a positive, enjoyable emotion or a negative one that you want to avoid? Positive, right? Very positive. So goodness, joy, enjoyment, pleasure, that goes with kind of pleased. And so that one's probably pretty easy to describe. Some of these are easy to describe. Some of these are maybe a little bit harder to describe. Okay, what about fear, feeling scared or afraid? I guess I already gave a word away there, but what words would you associate with feeling scared or afraid? Threatened, yeah.
Nervous.
Nervous, good. And we would say nervous would be like a high level of fear, or maybe a more low level. Like lower level, right? Like I'm a little nervous about that, as opposed to terrified, panicked, overwhelmed. Okay? Any other words that you think of with scared or afraid? Good. That's another good synonym. Anxious. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So scared or afraid has so much to do with anticipation and, you know, fear of unknown, right? Now, it doesn't have to be that. I'm not sure you could ever have an ironclad box to put these in, but it's kind of the what you don't know is going to happen, anticipation of something to come, right? So that anticipation is the idea of it's not there yet, but it's going to be coming. Or, of course, you're afraid of it going to be coming. And so anxiety might be described as a disorder of anticipation. It has all to do with something that might be coming. What's coming is going to be bad, and there's typically this kind of sentiment with it. It will be too much. I won't be able to handle it. So that's really where kind of the scared comes in. You might be in a piano recital, but and it's kind of a good nervous, right? Kind of a good excited. And so you feel that adrenaline, but you're not dreading it. You're not even that anxious per se. It's the, but what about something bad? You know, what if that thing comes? And where, you know, the rubber really meets the road is when the fear becomes, you know, what's going to happen is going to be too much. However you might articulate that, it crosses a line to where I won't be able to handle it. It won't be doable, endurable, whatever. So that's really where that takes over. So fear of unknown, it's scary because I don't know what it is. It's something coming and what's going to happen, and it's, you know, too much. So in terms of energy, would we say fear is an increase of energy or a losing of energy? Increase. Do you agree with that?
Well, it requires more energy.
Yes.
Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it definitely involves more energy. That doesn't, because you might even crash afterwards.
It drains you.
Afterwards.
Drains.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, that's an up in terms of energy. Okay. What about sad, sorrowful? What words would you associate with sad or sorrow? Depressed,
disappointed,
and disappointment would be a little bit or a lot of sorrow.
A lot.
It could be a lot. It absolutely could be a lot. Disappointment can be tragic, but in general, I think we use disappointment to describe something a little shallower. Yeah, as opposed to
maybe
devastated. Yeah.
More,
yeah. Jaded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Well, with depression, what were you using?
Okay, so in general, again, generally speaking, would we see sad as a like an up in energy or more of a downward in loss of energy? In general, we'd say down. Now, you may be overcome with emotion and sorrow, but even that, it becomes a stilling and driving you to not doing anything as opposed to other emotions, which are more prone to drive you to emotion. So sad definitely has more of a down sense to it. I'm feeling down, right? Loss. Loss is a key word with sadness. And when you think about that, you're like, oh yeah, duh. Like, you're sad because you've lost something, whether it was I didn't get to go to the party, that lost opportunity, or a physical thing, or relationship. So loss, you know, I think is a great word to consider with sadness. Other words that can be associated with sorrow is stuck, because again, the sadness tends to be a stilling and a down as opposed to driving to action. And hopeless, or, you know, drowning would be very much a bad place to be. Okay, I didn't ask this with fear. In general, being scared, especially at high levels like that, is scared enjoyable, or you want to avoid it?
Unavoidable.
You want to avoid, what's the word I'm looking for? You want to avoid it. You don't want it. What about sad? In general, do we want sad? Is that enjoyable or down? It's bad that I'm so sad. Bad, right? In general, you know, as a bad thing. Okay. And then what about mad or anger? What words would we associate with anger or being mad? Yeah, Phoebe.
Murderous, but also.
Okay. So actually, what's interesting, there's probably a lot to that. Even biblically, right? Jesus said, you've heard it said, don't murder, but I say to you, don't be angry. Well, Jesus put those two in the same verse. Now, Phoebe, you also said, you said murder, but also you said irritated, right? So would irritated be a lot of anger or more like a shallow amount of anger?
Depends on the person you are, but I'm going to say lower.
In general, I think we would use it to describe something lower. You can be very irritated, right? But even that would be irritated. You know, that irritates me, as opposed to I'm fuming or something. Right?
Resentful.
Okay, yeah. There's all kinds of really good Bible words, right? Bitterness, wrath, clamor, that would go with mattering. What else do you think of?
Frustrated.
Okay, yeah. So In general, I think this is the best description of what anger at its core is that there's something wrong. There's something bad, there's something wrong, and someone should do something about it. And so that's why anger has very much an action sense to it, right? It's not the only emotion that does that, but there's something wrong, and so that makes me angry. I'm reading the news, and this is good, this is good, this is good. But it's then when I read about this thing that happened over there, and that's bad, that's wrong, so that makes me angry, right? And so we get angry because someone mistreats me. Well, that's bad, that's wrong, you know? And so, and very much a drive, someone should do something about it. You may feel like I need to do something, you know? So someone's picking on me, and so I lash out in anger. We shouldn't lose control out of anger. Bible teaches us that. But that's just very natural, is that something's wrong, you shouldn't do that, or someone's doing something wrong to someone else, or you name it. Okay, so what's that?
Sorry, injustice, that's what I think
yes.
you're saying. Is it's any kind of injustice that's going on.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Not wrong in the sense of that makes me feel afraid or nervous. It's something wrong like bad injustice, and therefore, you know, that action, right? So someone should do something. And so, of course, you see especially God himself happy, God himself sorrow because of bad things, you know, loss, things that hit his heart. Anger, God is certainly described as angry. And there you see that principle very clearly. God says, this is wrong, this is bad, and I'm going to do something about it, right? The nations are at peace when they're wicked. No, that's bad. I'm going to step in and do something about it and bring justice. So you see that kind of thing. Okay, which of these are the most action-oriented? In other words, when you feel it, I need to do something. What's that?
Mad and scared.
Mad and scared. Do you guys agree with that? The two most action or do you feel a huge action? I've got to do something when you feel happy.
Sometimes.
You guys. I mean, how often do you walk around singing, you know, smiling? And you're
yeah.
Just kinda like light on your feet?
I don't mean it doesn't drive you to bottle like dancing or I'm in a good mood. Let's get ice cream. I mean like I've got this is making me. Take an action step or something. In general, we would say that mad makes me want to do something and fear makes me want to do something. So a good Bible example of that, 1 Samuel 25. This is where David is insulted by Nabal, right? And David's been really good to Nabal. He's watched his sheep. He's been kind to the shepherds. And David and his men are hungry, and they're refugees, and so David's asking for help. And Nabal, even though he's benefited from David's help, he has no interest in helping him out and insults David instead. And David is livid, right? Irate, there's some good anger words. He's livid. He is murderous. He is. He says, grab your sword. David's saying, I feel so much anger right now. So he says, grab your sword, we're going to go kill Nabal and his men. So that idea of angry, he's been insulted, this is wrong and bad, someone should do something about it, and he says, I'm going to do something about it. So he tells his men, get your stuff, we're going to go kill Nabal and his house. And remember in that story, who's the one who rescues and calms David down? Yeah. Abigail. Abigail's the one who calms him down. Okay. And then fear, good Bible story for that is Jeremiah 43. Some foolish people have killed the governor that Babylon set in place. So Gedaliah is murdered. And they're afraid that when Babylon shows back up, that they're just going to, you know, wreak havoc and punish them. And so the Jews want to run. They want to flee. And they have somewhat of a pious sentiment to say, okay, wait a second. Before we run off to Egypt, let's ask Jeremiah what God's going to say about this. So Jeremiah says, okay, I'll ask God, and then I'll tell you what God says. And then Jeremiah comes back to them a week later and says, God says, don't go. And they say, no, we're going to go. You're lying to us. And they are afraid They are terrified of what the Babylonians might do. Jeremiah says, don't worry, it'll be fine. But they don't want to hear that, and so they basically plug their ears and run because they are terrified. So, interestingly with this, anger and fear are probably the two emotions that make you the most irrational. I don't mean that glad or sad can't make you irrational. There's a lack of, there's a loss of pure rational thinking with any emotion. But mad, anger, and fear make you irrational instantly to do all kinds of foolish things. So fear, politicians know that. If you can get people afraid of the enemy, you know, they'll do anything, right? Anger drives people to do all kinds of irrational things. And so those are very action-oriented, but also very potentially irrational, like 0 to 60 in 1 second, and you're doing foolish things. Angry words, oh, let them never, from the tongue, unbridled slip, right? Brightest links of life are broken by a single angry word, right? We get angry and we do these foolish things that hurt our friendships. Okay, good. Thoughts so far on this kind of stuff?
I have something.
Yeah.
So after my divorce, I joined a support group, and one of the first things when we check in is they had a feelings wheel. I forget who came up with it. There's a person that's attributed to, but it was really a good thing. Like, at first I thought, this is so stupid. You know, why are we doing this? But to look at all of the, there are probably 100 choices.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to really pinpoint why, where am I at and why? And so I can see why they do that. But this reminds me of that.
Yes, yes, yes. So I'll bring an example of a feelings wheel kind of thing on Sunday. My sister, who's a, licensed social worker, she has this on her fridge. So she's trying to make her and her family aware of their emotions, and it's good. I think it's a useful thing, and that has a lot more on it, right? A lot more on it, and it is in general awareness of, hey, I'm feeling down, so I'm going to be prone to this and that. It's very helpful as opposed to always being caught unaware. You know, as like, why do I never see the pit I'm headed towards again? You know, that kind of thing. There's a hand in the back. Yeah, Heather.
We had something when the kids were little called that anger iceberg. Are you familiar with this? It's a picture of an iceberg, and the part you can see above the water says anger.
Mm-hmm.
But below it are all the original emotions that then made you angry. So like in David's situation, he felt insulted, and that made him angry. He felt that he wasn't being treated fairly, and that made it that anger tends to be kind of a secondary emotion. So for Corinne's point, when you really examine, am I just mad in general, or am I frustrated because I'm not making progress, or am I feeling treated unfairly? You know,
yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, and so, you know, psychologists give all kinds of like fancy terms for some of these things that to us, it's pretty common sense, right? You come home and you're mad at everyone in the family. You kick the dog. You yell at the kids. You know, well, everyone knows that something happened that day. It's not the dog that made him angry. It's not the kids. It's something else, right? So we displace that. We put that on other people. But fancy vocabulary or not, that's what's so easy to do. And so what starts as hurt, right? I was hurt and felt insulted. And then that comes out is just anger, when really the source of that was more nuanced. Yeah. Okay, so these are very, very much Bible emotions. Yes, sorry, Jen.
No.
I didn't see it.
A therapist that we know recommended this chart for kids, where the first part is I feel, and then, you know, fill that in with whatever you're feeling, and then I need, or like what you feel like you need to like help you kind of resolve where you are. Like, move you in a good direction. Like,
mm-hmm.
I feel overwhelmed, I need some alone time, or I feel angry, I need to like go for a run, or just kind of help you like go in a positive direction, or kind of resolve that.
Yes. Again, yeah, to learn to say for yourself, here's what I need. I think I just need some time to think or whatever. That's helpful. I think that's an awareness piece. Okay, again, this is oversimplified, but what happens when these four things can kind of get out of control, downward spiral? What do we call it when a person is controlled by sadness or stuck in sadness? Depression, right? And there's more to it than that. It's not just sadness. There's a lot of related down feelings. So it could be loss of motivation, loss of pleasure. It could be just feeling tired, all those things. But so it does, you may not even realize you're sad and kind of in a depressed state, but those tend to go together. Okay. What if you're stuck in fear? You're stuck in feeling afraid.
Anxiety,
right? Anger, we have some fun descriptions of when you're stuck in anger.
The Hulk.
The Hulk, yeah. Yeah.
A hothead.
Hothead, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Rage.
Yes, exactly. So rage, wrath, we might have to call it anger management issues, right?
In Mexico, they just call it normal.
He said that. I didn't say that. Okay, what about pleasure seeking? What if you're kind of stuck in feel-good stuff?
Out of touch with reality?
Yeah. I think a lot of what addiction is connected to that. Certainly a dopamine, oh, I like that, oh, that's satisfying, that pleasure piece. And so it's not that you're controlled by happiness. That's not even accurate. But just in the general sense here, you're stuck in trying to feel good, and that's where an addiction can. You know, you're not in an addiction. You're not trying to feel fear. You're not trying to feel anger. That kind of thing. Okay.
So if you think about that one that you were struggling with at work, in reality, the scriptures, they put joy there, and you could be even in horrible times, in suffering of the loss of whatever or something. But there's still joy. So, but I know we're not talking scriptures here, but yeah. But so I don't know. I know you went to addiction, but I was looking at it differently.
Sure. Yeah. Joy is an interesting thing. I think it's easy to go one direction or the other with joy. You know, we criticize from the Bible. We say no. The Bible says that joy is not happiness. Right. Happiness is what happens to you. It's happenstance. It's feeling good, whereas joy is much deeper than that. So you can have joy in sorrow. And that is true. Paul in Philippians offers just a very nuanced thing there. I know I just said this in my sermons through Philippians, but say it again. He's in prison, and he talks about joy, joy, joy. I have joy in you guys. But when he talks about Epaphroditus almost dying, he says, God have mercy on him and on us, lest we have sorrow upon sorrow. So he's had sorrow upon sorrow. So it's not like he's some emotionally unavailable, he's just stuck in contentment. No, he's been gone through hard times, you know. So we don't want to say on the other side that joy has nothing to do with good, positive things, you know. And it's not like, well, God wants you to be joyful, so heaven is going to be us. We're actually miserable, but there's some undercurrent of joy. No, like, there will be happiness to come, you know. So I think that the Bible does encourage us towards something much more stable than happiness, and joy being a choice. But even that joy is associated with a positiveness. You know, joy is still a good feeling as opposed to something you're trying to avoid. People don't. Probably people do avoid joy, but that's more of our damaged self coming out there. Okay. Okay. Too much fear. Now let's try connecting him a little bit more. Too much fear, which is an up energy, will usually give way to depression. So fear, anxiety, and the down, sad depression often go together. So fear gives you this up, but you're stuck on up for so long, what goes up must come down. And so if you're stuck in an up mode of fear, or really if you're stuck in any up mode at all, that what goes up must come down. So you're stuck in fear, and that just often gives way to depression, especially if you can't do anything about it, right? So there's a stuckness involved, there's a hopelessness involved. Well, then naturally that anxiety is going to, you know, give way into feeling afraid, depression. Anxiety and depression like to hang out. They're cousins who hold hands. And so a lot of times you have both those things together, anxiety and depression. Anxiety being more the up of you know, anticipation, and then because you can't sustain that forever and it's miserable, then you're also very prone to feeling down. And that roller coaster of two up and two down is, no surprise, quite miserable. Okay, so that's kind of the basic principle we're going to see here, is all these up things will often, all these up things eventually will make us feel down. That's just inevitable. So we'll talk more about that. Okay, any thoughts about this, about the fear that can often hang out with or lead to depression? Okay, when things are angering and upsetting, especially if you can't or don't do anything about it, it can give way to depression. So there's an up, and you're angry, but you can't do anything. Okay, so common sense kind of thing, you're reading that news article about this injustice, and that makes you so upset. Someone should do something. And then the more you read, like, oh, people have been doing things, and I can't do anything. You can pray, but that sense of stuck, oh, I can't do anything about it. I'm angry, but I can't act on it. Remember, anger is about there's injustice or a problem. I need to act on it. Well, I can't. So you're angered, but you can't do anything, or you don't. Maybe you're furious at your mother-in-law, but you hold your tongue, because you should hold your tongue. Well, I was angry, so I don't say anything, but then it's just like, oh, and so you get really upset after that, right? So resolution is good. Anger that leads to action and resolution, that's going to make you feel good. That's not going to lead to depression. That's going to feel good about that. But stuck and unresolved is going to be bad. Pretty straightforward there. And I don't think I have a slide for this, but this whole idea of what goes up must come down is true even for happiness. If you guys read about or experienced that, like, you get back from a vacation and you're depressed, it's because you've been up for so long. What's going to happen? You're going to feel down again, right? And so that's just very natural. Is even when things are going very good, and then you're going to have, you know, a tip off, and things are going to maybe feel down again. So again, just notice that. Be like, oh yeah, when we come back from vacation, school is always hard again for the kids, and things are always stressful at home, or whatever it is. That's just pretty natural. Any thoughts on that?
Well, that makes it difficult then not to have your happiness robbed during the natural up, if you're just anticipating the down. So I guess recognizing there's a rhythm maybe allows you to, like, this is the rhythm where I need to feel up and happy, and that's good, and not be scared about the down.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ecclesiastes would say enjoy vacation for what it is, but you can't let that give you life satisfaction. It will not give you life satisfaction. It is vanity. So if it goes great, awesome. Enjoy the wife of your youth, or enjoy food, or whatever it is, right? And Ecclesiastes says, but realize it's all vanity. You know, so it's going to enjoy it, or maybe it goes awful, and you go, wow, that's Ecclesiastes 2. This vacation was awesome. I'm so glad to return back to home. You know, that kind of thing. So that's what Ecclesiastes would say. Enjoy these things if you're blessed with them, but it's still vanity. Yeah, correct.
I was just gonna say, it was like after Christmas, everybody's like, oh,
yeah.
After the holidays.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So anticipating that, you know, is a good thing. Good. Jen, I'm sorry, I don't see you over there.
No, I'm sorry. You probably said this, but I missed it. So what is, like, a good healthy resolution to, like, being angry, for example? Cause there are a lot of, like, unhealthy ways to resolve that. So I don't know. What would you see as, like, a good resolution?
So, yeah, not doing anything and freezing in that, or getting stuck in that, that's just going to be more difficult. So that's why prayer is so helpful. That I can at least do something, right? Or not seeing it as stuck or hopeless or inevitable, but having a greater sense of hope. I'm angry about that. You know, the Lord's going to bring His will. God can use this for something. So instead of just feeling like I'm beating my head against a wall, I think a sense of accomplishment, a sense of I did do something to help, or it's going to be okay, like all those things kind of move us forward instead of a hopelessness. So I think, you know, 100 different situations would call for different things. And, you know, the anger thing, can, I'm mad, OK, Okay, say that it's a family problem, say that it's a church problem, say it's a job problem, it doesn't matter. It's like, I'm so mad, I can't do anything, or I don't do anything, and that just kind of builds and builds and builds, and you're not doing anything about it when you maybe could be. And that's when you start to feel depressed. Essentially, if depression is seen as a weight, you've put that weight on yourself. You've put this whole weeks and months of weight on yourself. Well, you could have been getting rid of that weight all along by handling that in better ways. Yeah, Elias.
I don't know if at some point you were going to bring like scriptures towards like bringing your cares to God. Because at the end of the day, if you're talking about this anger that there's nothing we can do, there's so many things, there's nothing we can do, that's the point. Like, we need to bring our cares to God, or either if you're afraid or depressed. So that's the point, that we have a Father that...
All the Psalms, yes. Yes, absolutely, yes. Yeah, so if we were going to put some of the concepts we've touched on in this quarter, things like 1 Peter 5, casting your cares on God. That's the, don't give him a show and tell of your burdens. Actually, lay your burdens on him, right? And all the Psalms that bring their anger to God, that's what's interesting. You start noticing Psalms, and we'll see this. I think we'll see this in a minute here. The Psalms that bring their anger to God, and that's the one that I think we're maybe the least comfortable with. Sad, yep, pray to God about it. Happy, pray to God about it. Scared, yep, pray to God about it. What, anger? Well, no, don't bring anger to God. But you read Psalm 44 and Psalm 89, what's the moth one, 38? Some of those, they are anger with God. And they're still, of course, the respectful they should be, but that's very helpful. That's very, instead of getting stuck in that emotion then, to express it in a way that is productive and to help you move through it then to resolution. So those are great examples for us. And I think we do poorly with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think a good way to deal with any of these would probably be like, let's say I'm having a bad situation with a friend and I need to talk it out to my mom. I want to rehearse that conversation with her that I have with my friend that made me mad or scared or sad. And try to use reason, be like, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen here? Worst thing that could happen is that I would punch her. And I know I shouldn't do that. So you've got to try and use reason. Even if it makes you mad, you got to try and stay level-headed with that and use reason.
Yeah, and what we can do with God is when we can be very transparent with God and really bring to him, God, I hate this. I hate what's going on. God, I'm furious right now, whatever it is. Well, then, what am I doing? I'm literally, instead of bearing that burden, I'm literally putting that burden on God. I can't bear this anymore. Actually, I don't have to. Like, I can give that to God. And then that helps us to then be as self-controlled as we need to with other people. Like saying, I can't do that. God says I'm not allowed to be yelling and screaming and hitting and all these angry things. So I take the time to bring my emotions to God, and then no one else has to bear that burden because he's bearing that burden for me. So that becomes very helpful for us. What's the, is 30, 38 is not what I'm, what I meant. 39, sorry. 39 is, I'm like a moth. You can, when you discipline man with rebukes for sin, you consume like a moth what is dear to him. What did I say? I said Psalm 39, Psalm 44, Psalm 89 are some psalms really bring anger to God. So whether the up emotion is anger or fear or shame or stress, yeah, kind of you name it, if you can bring it into sadness when it doesn't resolve, when you get stuck in that, so you might just feel depressed because of a mounting sense of stress and kind of responsibility that you're like, you can't get out from under. And that becomes this burden and that up and this drive, and you're like, now I'm just tired and now I don't care anymore. And you know, the concepts like burnout with that. Well, all the that stress, that up, or anger, if you're any of those, when it's not resolved well, there's you can't do anything about it. That's when it so easily becomes depression, is because there's now become a hopeless quality to it. Now, here I think is a reasonable thing to think about. Some people have a true propensity toward depression. Like, they think like a depressed person, the kind of thing that Dr. Yapko would talk about, right? They think in those kind of worst case things or taking to those extremes. And so from their thinking or their body or their relationships or their upbringing, you name it, whatever, they have a propensity towards depression. Whereas other times, other people, it's really the buried anger or it's the stress or the fear that's what's bringing down into depression. So does that distinction make sense? You're like, that person used to be so happy and now they're depressed. That may be, or this is generalizing, but maybe a person who in general doesn't think in a depressed kind of way, but they've been under whatever stress for so long, that's then what's buried them in that. So that doesn't mean the solution is any easier. That doesn't mean they're easier, but it is two different animals, right? A person who really tends to think depressed versus a person who's kind of brought into that through whatever. Okay, now we're gonna talk about the self and talk about shame. So wrapping up some emotions. Anything you wanna add to it before we wrap up the emotion side of this? Feel any strong emotions about class tonight? Okay, so what are some emotions we can have about ourselves? Any thoughts come to mind? What are some emotions you can have in relationship to yourself?
You can still feel anger.
Mm-hmm.
5 minute warning.
Disappointment.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned shame a second ago.
Oh, good. I'm glad you have pride. I was going to say pride because I was thinking when sometimes you don't really bring all your cares to God, you're like, oh, I can deal with some of this, but I almost didn't want to say it. But
Was pride keeping you from...
It was pride.
It was pride, yeah. So pride or self-satisfied, feeling honored, kind of a confidence, right? Like the king in Proverbs 30, right? The king marching with his army that... strutting like a rooster, right?
We can feel extremely, unworthy.
Unworthy, yeah.
Very
so humble, lowly.
That can be twisted,
yep.
Too.
Oh, yes.
People can
yes.
be extremely, have really low, feel very unworthy, but project that they're prideful.
Yes, or...
it's the compensation.
Yeah, or the opposite. It's really a lot of pride, but it comes off as self-deprecating
right.
or something. Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Nervous?
Yeah.
Is that a feeling?
About yourself? Nervous about yourself? I mean...
Or you can be afraid that you're going to do something.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that probably not super high. Okay. You can feel connected to yourself or grounded or at peace, like just fine, good, grounded, right? Or you can feel unstable, disconnected, lonely. That's connected to sadness usually, but... lonely, unappreciated, right? All those things. Guilt would be an emotion about yourself, right? Some of these are very connected to other people. They're emotions we have about ourselves, but maybe it's because of how other people view us, how other people have taught us to view ourselves, right? So you have, there's an expression in China, I don't know how common it is, but someone said this to my dad, you know, Mao Zedong, who the Communist Revolution, and he, you know, killed millions of people and a terrible communist ruler. He was a spoiled brat. He was an undisciplined, spoiled brat kid. And so the joke has been made in China. Okay, so you had one tyrant, right? Well, now with kids in China, they're raised by their grandparents and not their parents. They're undisciplined. Life is easier, blah, blah, blah. They said China used to have one tyrant, and now we have a billion little tyrants, right? So, interesting little joke there. Well, a little tyrant is they've been taught to think about themselves that their way's great. I should have my way. I'm awesome. I'm lord of this house, whatever. And you teach a kid that, they'll pick up on that they're awesome in every little way, and they can do no wrong, and how dare you say that to Johnny, that kind of thing. And so that's a bad thing, and kids will have a really hard time overcoming that, outgrowing that, if they've been taught to be a little Mao, right? To be a little dictator. Or negative, teach them that they should be ignored, they're unlovable, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, So one of the biggest challenges we face is shame. I think the best definition of shame is internalized worthlessness, really a sense of, my sense about myself is I feel like I am worthless. Now, we'll talk about good Bible shame, some good verses about that. Good Bible shame versus kind of a bad, broken shame. And here's what's interesting, so I'll get to this. Yeah, no.
I was just gonna say, it all kind of ties in with doubt, like having doubt in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that can be a real trigger for, or the slide for my shame is then an lack of certainty, a doubt, lack of confidence, etc. Yeah. So here's what's really interesting, is shame is the first curse of sin. The first result of sin in the Bible is they ate the fruit and what? They knew that they were naked. So that's fascinating, that when sin separates us from God and begins this death in us, right, that the first thing we feel from that is shame. There's a lot to think about. It's a pretty deep idea, I think. So when we think about shame as a bad thing, like I said, we'll look at verses. Shame is obviously a good thing. It's right place. There's things we should be ashamed of. But fundamentally, even that is because of sin, right? And heaven is not a place of shame. Heaven is a place of openness and love and a lack of all that, right? So shame is the first curse of sin. I think says a lot about our human nature.
End of class.
Okay, so we'll start here next time. Godly proper shame, Jeremiah 6:15. They should know shame. They forgot how to blush. They should know how to blush. So we'll talk about the difference between proper godly shame versus improper shame. Thank you all.